Hi, I'm Luanda, and you're listening to Ethnically Speaking.
You know, the cost of renting is often very equal, if not higher, than the cost of your average monthly mortgage payment. But it's that saving for the mortgage that's the hard part. And Anissa, you said something interesting about Nationwide and what they're doing. Maybe they only want particular types of people who can afford it. But if let's be honest, the majority of ethnic minorities. Now come back again. The majority of highly melanated people.
Andy Yasmin.
Hi, I'm Anissa, and welcome to episode 9 of Ethnically Speaking. So we are four fabulously smart, curious, and opinionated, highly melanated women representing the UK, and we are here to discuss everything and anything affecting our communities, from current affairs to pop culture and everything in between. Nothing is off limits, and we always keep it 100. So forget tiptoeing around topics and technically speaking, because today we are ethnically speaking. So, Luanda, what is on your mind, girl?
Well, the Nationwide Building Society has changed a few of its rules when it comes to first-time buyers when they're trying to buy a home. So this is going to greatly affect young people who rely on the bank of mum and dad, as people call it. The people who are relying on their parents' pockets are now seeing the mortgage deals that were once available to them fall by more than half, because what the Nationwide Building Society has decided is that the first-time buyers now need to prove that they have saved the majority of their deposit themselves. So do you think that leaves us millennials in a place where we might be renters forever? And do you think it really matters whether we're renting or buying?
I think that's a tough one, because I think basically the UK is kind of obsessed with home ownership. So this kind of leaves us in a very, very tricky position. Like, all you've ever heard is you need to own a house. And I think from Jamaican descent, my dad has always been one about you need to find a house, you need to get a mortgage. But if you look in other places like France or Spain, like I have friends that live in France and they're like, everyone rents there. It's not a big deal. And I think now now I think like we are generation rent, because it's so expensive. We don't know if we're ever gonna own home. So people are just like, forget it. Maybe I'll just rent forever. So I think even though prices are going up and Nationwide are reluctant to give out mortgages, I think that's leaving us a real big decision as to actually, is even buying for me, or should I just stick to renting?
Sophie, you're so right. And you know what? I feel like what Nationwide are doing is a little bit unfair, because it's so difficult to get onto the property ladder as it is. And those who are lucky enough to have the bank of mum and dad, because don't forget, not everyone has that bank, right? But those who are lucky enough, I feel as though they're being penalised for the luxury of having parents who are in the capacity to help them get onto the mortgage ladder, like onto the homeowner ladder, whatever you want to call it. So I don't understand what their reason is behind that decision, because the money doesn't change. It's still the same amount of money. It still goes towards the deposit. It's not counterfeit money. It's not illegal money. Like, I actually don't get their thought process behind that. And I do feel like, yes, Sophie, you're right. The UK is very, very obsessed with, you know, owning a home. And I get it, you know, in our original lands, like places like Jamaica and like, you know, Africa, it's very big on, you know, buying land and building a home from scratch, you know, and I get it. When you own a home, you have collateral, you have something that you can use in case of a rainy day, you can remortgage and you release money from your property, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So for those reasons, I'm all for it. But I don't know, I feel like this, if other banks adopt the same kind of notion as Nationwide, is definitely going to see an even bigger change, and even more people will continue to rent.
You know what, Linda?
I don't know if they're doing this as like some sort of tactic to only have certain buyers. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, I don't know if it's, because I don't understand why you wouldn't want to give someone a mortgage if they can afford it. Obviously, you don't give out willy-nilly, but if the person can afford the mortgage, whether they got it from their mum, their dad, or Peter or Paul, it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? Like, they can afford a mortgage. For me, I've never really I've never really had the spirit of ownership on me, if that makes any sense. Like, I never grew up saying, like, everyone around me grew up and was like, oh yeah, I'm going to own a business, my own business, and I'm going to own my own house. And I never just had that bug. I was just like, oh, I don't know. And but as I've grown up, I thought to myself, yeah, probably it's probably good that I own something and that I have something that is mine. And I don't know if that's what everybody else, like our peers, the people that are like our age, are thinking the same thing. I mean, I'm in no rush to buy a house now. But I think in London, when you start to think about it, maybe it might make sense to buy a house just because the rent is so high anyway. Like, something that you're paying in rent is other people's mortgage. So it kind of makes sense that you're paying into your own house. Yeah. So I'm always like, oh, I'm just confused.
Well, I was going to respond to what Linda said, but now you've put me on a whole different train of thought, Anissa, because for me, it's true, you have, it's fine. But I think now what you said in terms of like renting versus buying in terms of the prices, I think one of the things that scares me about renting, which I will be a renter for a while, even if I do decide to get a mortgage, but one of the things that scares me about it is the fact that the price can go up at any time and you have no control over that. And in terms of gentrification, because you mentioned London, and for anyone that doesn't know, gentrification is when they make an area more appealing to the middle class by upgrading certain, like, you know, you might have a Poundland that turns into an M&S and the cost of living.
Starbucks.
Yeah. When you see a Starbucks in your neighborhood, you know it's
gentrification,
a
wrap, okay? Is coming.
It's coming. But that's the thing. But the thing that also goes up is the cost of living. And it might go up to the point that it surpasses the amount that you can pay for. And then at that point, you're also going to be the thing that gets upgraded out of the neighborhood, and they'll get some nice middle class people to replace you as well. So in light of that, I guess that does make me kind of fearful, the fact that you're not in control at all when you're renting.
But I like the way things are going now, in the sense of people are really thinking, do I need a house? Because I've rented for a while in London, and having my own flat was some of the happiest times. Like, being able to call my landlady every time something broke down, mate, that was a sweet spot for me. And it is still now. My toilet seat cracked. We called our landlord and was just like, can you come fix the toilet seat, please? We're still deciding who broke the toilet seat. No one wants to claim it. But the point is that once you have a home, everything is down to you. The boiler breaks, a window cracks, a leaky roof. And it's just, it's expense upon expense upon expense. And for me, renting gives you the ability to kind of up and leave if you want to. Like, if I get a job in another country, like, we live in a global world now. So someone getting a job and saying, I'm going to work in Spain for a year, or I'm going to go move up north, or I'm going to move to Brighton, that's not unexpected anymore. You're not going to blink an eyelid at it. And not being able to have a pile of bricks that you need to think about renting out. And yeah. I don't know. I don't want to say too much. But the point is that when you have a house, it's an asset, yes, but you don't know when you're going to be able to sell it. Like, if the market takes a crash, you could be selling it under the price that you bought it, but you might be desperate to sell and lose the money. With renting, you don't have all those restrictions on you. So I'm really glad that our generation is starting to think, is this for me? Because it's a lifetime commitment.
You're right. And I feel like back in the day, it was all about, you know, only if you were rich, you were able to mortgage. And I feel like people don't see it that way anymore. And yes, you know, the cost of renting is often very equal, if not higher, than the cost of your average monthly mortgage payment. But it's that saving for the mortgage that's the hard part. And Anissa, you said something interesting about Nationwide and what they're doing. Maybe they only want particular types of people who can afford it. But if, let's be honest, the majority of ethnic minorities. Now come back again. The majority of highly melanated people. The majority of highly melanated people, we're not the ones whose parents are giving us money for deposits. Let's not lie. I'm not saying that, you know, highly melanated people are broke and we have no money. And I'm not saying that, but I'm saying historically, if you look at the people who are able to come through with a bank of mum and dad, it typically isn't us. So that's why, once again, I don't quite understand what Nationwide are doing, because if you clock more of us, our highly melanated selves, are getting into positions of power, are understanding how to to save, are understanding how to go into stocks, are understanding how to build wealth and generational wealth. So once again, I feel like we're more likely to be the people who save up for the deposit our damn selves without any help from mum and dad. So I don't know what, I don't get what Nationwide are doing.
What the motivation? Yeah, I think, okay, so my train of thought is back from what you were saying.
You brought it back.
I think because when I first read about this, I had the same thought. It did kind of feel like people who had that advantage were being punished. And, you know, your parents want to provide for you. And parents, when they have children, when they start a family, they make so many sacrifices for their kids. So I just can only imagine how frustrating it would be to have spent like a large part of your life making decisions in light of what would be best for them. And then when they get to these big milestones, like owning their first home, not being able to help them. I think they said something about how it would be better for the security of the economy, but they didn't elaborate on how that works. So it doesn't make sense to me either. I'm baffled.
No, but you know what? That doesn't make sense. Sorry, Seth, just jump in real quick, right? That doesn't make sense because firstly, when you have a deposit on a mortgage, you're still credit checked. And beyond your credit check, they go deep. It's not just, you know, what does experience say your score is? They go through what your expenditure is. So before anyone gets that mortgage and gets, you know, approved for it, they make sure that you can afford a particular amount of monthly payments. That's why even they go and revalue the house that you propose that you want to buy to make sure that it's worth the estimation that whoever is telling you is worth, and they match it all up with what you can afford monthly. So when it comes to that and it's the benefit of the economy, that don't make no sense to me, because it's not as though they're just saying, okay, bring 50 bags and boom, there's your mortgage, because it's not as simple as that.
I think right now, the reason why I think they've brought it in is because of coronavirus and the pandemic. So because so many jobs are being lost, they're afraid. Let's say, for example, that I earn £30,000, my husband earns £30,000. It's going to take us a long time to raise the money for our mortgage. My mum comes in and she's like, here's £40,000 to put towards it. You might have the deposit, but for them, with coronavirus, they're like, we don't know if you're going to be able to keep your job and keep up with the payments. Whereas if we know that you've saved 75% yourself, if anything kind of goes belly up, you should still be able to make that money and provide.
No, with the but Sophie, look, that's look, not right.
I'm telling you, like, so me and my husband are in the position where we're thinking, could we buy the house that we live in? And we have been going through all the checks. And because of coronavirus, they have told us that we couldn't even look at 10% mortgages, like putting up 10%, because they're like, the market is so flooded. They're like, they're not even accepting those applications. So they asked some people, if you wanted to give 10, think about giving 15. Try and give more money, because we're not looking to give out less amounts, because now if we give out big amounts of money, we don't know if you're going to be able to secure on that loan. We had to answer, why has your wage not been affected by coronavirus? And I was just like, sorry, what? My brother-in-law,
because we're covered by the blood of Christ. What is it to you?
Unfortunately, they're not taking that as a reason. The blood of Jesus is not convincing them to give us a mortgage. So I'm saying the banks are seeing it as an extra criteria to safeguard themselves. If you lose your job, we know that if you save 75%, you might have more money in the bank.
Okay, so when you add it like that, I get that. But so Anissa, but you know what? Here's the thing. Just because you were able to save doesn't mean you can't still lose your job. And just because, and some people, let's not get it twisted, right? When you save for a mortgage, you're not just saving for the deposit, you're saving for all the fees that go along with that. But typically, that's all you have. You're not going to think, okay, well, you know, my deposit is 40, I'm going to save an extra 10 for fees, fine. But you're not going to say, you know, let me save an extra 20 just to, no, it doesn't work like that. So the same security that they think isn't there because of corona and people, you know, getting lumps for their deposits, still isn't there for people who have saved their deposit. It's still doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I was only gonna say, my thought was, how do they know that you're getting this money from your mum and dad? I know that sounds crazy, but like,
they go through your statements. They see exactly what you spent your money on. No, so they'll see what's coming into your account, so from your wages or any other assets that you have, and they will match it up with what's going out on your expenditure. So if you're only getting 30k coming in a year and you're spending, let's say, 20k, but somehow you've managed to save 30k in 1 year, that money came from somewhere.
Exactly. You could be earning, let's say you're earning 50k, Anissa. You could be like, I'm earning 50k, I can pay. But they were like, well, we've looked at your previous credit ratings and scores, and every time you get money, you spend £900 worth, 90% of it, they're kind of like, we can see you're not a good investment because you don't know how to save money, so you're not going to be able to pay towards your mortgage. So if you want to get a mortgage, people, you need to start saving that amount of money now so you can show them I can actually pay towards, like, it's a very intense process.
Really serious.
If they're doing this for security purposes, then would you still, even in light of everything that you just said, Sophie, about the coronavirus and stuff like that, wouldn't you still want to have the rich kids buying your mortgage? Because at the end of the day, the
yes, their parents may have more.
Yeah, they'll have more because they'll have like an allowance. Like, I have so many
a nest egg.
Who are like, who they don't really like, they don't really work that much, but they're like, oh, they're kind of embarrassed to say, but they have an allowance from their parents. But yeah. I'd rather have those kind of people. If you're looking for like financial security and to secure the economy and stuff like that, have those people in the position of like buying their first home, because at the end of the day, if something breaks and they can't afford it, they can just call mummy and daddy and it will get sorted. But the thing that scares me is like when I was looking into like mortgage and everything, that like, I don't know if you guys know already, but the breakdown of the word literally means until death.
Yep.
Like, that is petrifying.
Yep.
Petrifying. And if you think about it, it actually goes beyond the grave, because if you die, you still have mortgage payments.
Yeah.
That's going to then fall to your kinfolk. And so maybe some people, like, you guys know Elon Musk is like this, he's like one of the richest men in the world. He recently decided that I'm not going to own any homes, and he's selling all of his like 5 mansions because he's like, I don't know what he's doing. But
he can. Renting could be the way forward for people.
It really could be, because I think you don't want to have your children or have your spouse inherit debt. Like, you want them to inherit something like a business or like some jewelry. You don't want them to just take on, like, they're already grieving the loss of you, and then they're also going to take on the loss of income from having to pay this off. Like,
but that's, it's not ridiculous. Always necessarily the way, because like my husband's grandfather, when he died, he bought a house in an area in East London that wasn't that affluent when he bought it, but now, because of gentrification, when he died and sold it, everyone got a very, very healthy cut.
Ooh,
so
nice.
It can still be a good investment, but you need to see housing as a long-term investment. It's not something that's going to pay off in like 5 years.
And time. Also, like going off the back of what you said, Sophie, he can only have done that because the area was gentrified.
Yeah.
Sometimes it loses value, so it doesn't always work out for the positive. Like you said, it needs to be a long-term thing, and it's still a risk. It's a risk.
Yeah.
You're right. But you mentioned Elon Musk, Loanda, who is a new dad. He welcomed a baby boy whose name, we don't even know the name yet. Ex-Zion.
I don't know.
Yes. Him and his girlfriend, they welcomed a baby. Now, I don't know if you also know Zonique, who is T.I.'s stepdaughter. She has announced that she is expecting a little bundle of joy as well. But now, the way she went about this was a little bit interesting, okay? Because she didn't do the usual, you know, let me tell my family and then let me tell the world. She announced it on one of her, I think she got a show called The Mix or something like that.
Yeah.
She announced it via the show, and she did like a magazine spread where she admitted that some of her family only found out that way. She hadn't even told them before she let the world, the public and her fans know. So take that breath, because I was like, honestly, do you think it's ever okay to share, you know, these milestone moments with the public before you share them with your family?
Linda, I'm stressed by the whole question. The reason why I'm stressed is because I don't know what side of the fence I land on with this. And I know this sounds crazy, because when I was watching Zonique tell T.I. live that she was pregnant, at the disbelief in his face, I was thinking to myself, girl, you could have done this on camera. Like, there's no need to do it here. And when she was saying, oh, like, you know, she hasn't told her family, I just thought, this is particularly strange. I don't understand it. But then when I sat and thought about myself, me, she, her, Anissa, I thought to myself, ooh, this is something I could see me doing. And I know that sounds crazy.
Really?
Crazy. Yes, I know that sounds crazy. And that's why, even though I was like, oh, what's she doing? I could not be a hypocrite, because I knew that, listen, the reason is I am a particularly private person, even with my family. So, like, I could imagine just turning up one day and be like, hey guys, I got a baby. Like, I can imagine doing that. And so, like, even when I always say, if I do get married, it would only ever be me, my husband, and the pastor. I don't want nobody else there. Like, I'm always talking about having privacy. Like, I don't want no one involved. So I can imagine myself doing it, but I could just imagine, like, turning up to my family. I don't imagine announcing it over the internet. That's what's weird. I don't think I'd go to the internet, but I do imagine that I'll be like, hey, guys, here's this baby. But, yeah, so that's how I'm on the fence with it. But particularly for me, I wouldn't go on the internet to announce milestones that my family don't know about. I just probably just wouldn't announce it altogether. So that's me. Sorry.
I've kind of done it before, but by accident. It was...
Oh. Too shy. Yeah.
So when I got engaged, I thought that I had messaged everybody important, but I didn't. And then I posted it online. And then...
Who did you forget?
I told the big fat lie, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. They were like, I didn't tell. And they were like, you didn't tell us? I was like, oh, I just thought I'd just tell everyone at once online. I just thought I'd let everybody know. But no, I seriously just forgot that.
They know the truth today.
Look, man, again, I will say again, I hope they're not watching, but yeah. It was very uncomfortable. So I would say if you've got a major milestone, make sure you write down everyone who's important, take a day, check it again, and then announce your engagement or your university or your sonogram. Because yeah, some people get left off the list accidentally.
Oh, if I were your stepfather, be one of them. That's what I'm just thinking.
And hers wasn't an accident, Sophie. Hers was intentional. Like, for me, I think that's really strange. Now, don't get twisted, you know. No, here's the thing. Don't get twisted. My family annoy me sometimes. Do not get it twisted. They truly, truly do, right? But something like that, I cannot imagine letting the world know before my family. I don't care how big my celebrity gets, because those fans, those followers, those people listening via YouTube or podcast, they are not my family members. And as much as they show support for whatever it is, whether, you know, content wise, and they may, you know, follow me and wish me the best and, you know, really be there for me and have been backing me since day, they are not, but you know what I mean? Like, you always hear that, oh, I've loved you from day dot, you know, but they're not my family. They have not been there through the tough times, you know, through the times that I can't even put on social media. Ooh. So for that, no, but it's true. They haven't been there for that. So that's why I can't do that. And don't get twisted, I had something similar. So when my dad passed away, firstly, let me just make sure this makes sense here. When my dad passed away, I told everyone important to me, to the point where I told my boyfriend, my ex-boyfriend, as you guys know, who's now married, expecting a little one with his wife in New York. I sent, you know, everyone who knew my dad well, I sent messages to them. But then when it came to extended family members, like some of the distant cousins and people that are close but not too close, I couldn't be bothered to keep sending those individual messages. It started draining me. So once my siblings had decided to put something on social media, because they are typically quite private, once they had put something on social media, I then put something on social media just to be able to hit a couple of people with one stone. And that's because all the people closest to me had already been told. The people that I cared about had already come to visit me by the time I put it on social media. So that was me. I didn't go to the world first, because let's not lie, people, the world doesn't care. The world doesn't true. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm preaching right now here, but the world doesn't care.
That's not true. That's not true. The world cares. And I think that
really?
Seriously, and I think that there's a big difference between looking at it through the perspective of you being a celebrity versus you being like a relatively normal person. And I think that if you are a celebrity, first of all, obviously you have the thing is if you are a celebrity and like yourself, Linda, you want your privacy, you absolutely have a right to that. You have a right to, you know, do everything in your power to make sure that your personal life remains personal. But if you happen to be the type of celebrity who wants to capitalize on private moments, then it works every time. Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I don't think any of us knew the name of her show. None of us knew the mix before this happened.
Yeah.
It works every time. And people
but I ain't
who,
gonna watch
you
it.
Said, but 50% of the people who discovered it through that pipeline will. So she's gained something, they all have. And I just think, like, from my perspective, if it was me, if I was in T.I.'s position, I think that I would appreciate it. If you're dealing with a family of celebrities, I don't mind there being real moments that are recorded, but I think they should be pre-recorded, and then there should be a conversation of consent, like, do you mind if this goes on the internet instead of it being live, because that's a whole different ballgame. But if we think about all of these other reality shows, they're given you know, birth to their babies, they're getting married, we're seeing engagements, like all of these things happen because they know, like, when you open someone up and you make them feel like they're a part of your world, they're more likely to support you, and therefore you're going to gain more revenue from it. So it's smart.
But it's not always support. It kind of sometimes is nosiness. And I just think it's really interesting the way the world has gone, because if you put it, obviously it's because of social media, but if you go back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, before, our celebrities were enigmas, you know, they were mysterious. We didn't know everything about them, and we wanted, you know what I mean? But because we have such access and social media is so powerful, we feel as though we are entitled to know every nook and cranny. And because we are so nosy and because we want to know everything about everyone, that's why these people are capitalizing off of this moment. Because I personally don't think T.I. was happy. Obviously, I've not actually watched the clip, but I can imagine that him and his expeditious self would not have been too impressed with that coming out of that way. And you know, the way I had to think hard before I pronounced that word, yeah?
But that's not going to change, Linda. That's not going to change.
Yeah.
Like, us being interested in personal moments and stuff, that's not going to, like, that's not going to go away. And people love celebrities to the point where they don't mind their privacy being violated so that they can know what they want to know. If you're not sharing it with me, I'll find out another way. And TMZ know this, and all those like People magazines and all those like sneaky ones that take pictures of like Jennifer Aniston topless sunbathing, they know. And it works.
I want to jump in, not particularly for Zinique's defense, but just to give it, offer a different perspective. She did say that the reason why she was telling him live was because she was just generally scared of how he was going to react. And I know, like, there's some family members that, you know, you're just scared to say anything to, even if they're close to you, because you don't know what judgment they're going to lay upon you. So sometimes it's almost easier to kind of pacify the situation a little bit. It's kind of like, you know, when you, I don't know if you guys ever done it, but you know, you have to tell like your parents something, but you're scared. So you round up all your siblings and there's more people in the room. To help.
That's so different.
There weren't that many of us.
But if you have a lot, but just to dilute the situation, because then there's a lot of different reactions. It's kind of, I think, you know, that situation can transcend social media, where it's like, you know what, I don't really know how you're going to react, so I'm just going to do it in a situation where you almost can't react, or at least can't give me that direct reaction. And I know you're shaking your head, Luanda, but that's how some people would think. And I'm not going to lie, I mean, I would be frightened to tell my parents that I'm pregnant, even in my big old age now.
You're not old, and I'm sick of you saying this. You're not old.
I'm old. I'm not
going
to go back.
No, you're not.
And it's a shut up. Shut up.
Okay, I'm older. But what I will say is, I would be scared to tell my parents. Not even scared. I just don't know if I'd be scared or embarrassed or just feel awkward. So if that's how she was feeling, then I kind of understand.
It doesn't put Anissa, no, because like she's made it, if that was the situation, she's just then made it worse. Because what you've not only done is you're going to have that live reaction where you're uncomfortable with all your boys, and most of them on the show were like, oh, rah, we, T.I. coming into this, didn't even know we didn't know. So this is weird for us as well. And then second of all, you're now going to have the real reaction offline. And then third of all, you're going to have the reaction that you put him in the hot seat and like called him out like that. So it's like, if you thought he was going to be mad, he's twice as mad now.
But I think that, look, the thing with T.I. is, like, I think it says more about a relationship when you think that you want to reveal something that publicly. Like, when it comes down to it, it's about the relationship that you have with people. And I think in this very specific situation, we have to remember that T.I. is the guy that took one of his daughters to the doctor every year to check that her hymen was in place and to check that she was still a virgin. So
I didn't think that was real.
No, it was real.
He said he did it once. Every year he only took her once, but once is too many times.
It's like an invasion of privacy and her body, in my opinion. So this is a man who was willing to do that. This is a man, he sat down at the red table with Jaden. He talks about with Tiny how he didn't want his, really want his wife to work. He wanted her to kind of stay at home and raise the children, and he wanted to be, so there is something going on there, in my opinion. So the fact that she was
short,
like,
man, complex,
I don't know how tall he is, but the fact that she wanted to release it publicly, I think it was because there was genuine a feeling of, I don't know how my dad is going to cope with this. I don't know what it's going to be like. Like, he already has like an issue with women and, you know, sexuality and the role of a woman. He has very clear boundaries as to what he thinks that should be. So I think that's the reason why she took this step. Because my man was lost. He went off to go and get weed. He was just like, I'm going to go get a joint. Like, he was lost.
He poured himself a second drink.
Exactly. He was gone.
He was like, there is not enough alcohol.
Wow.
I feel like he was having a real dad reaction. I know, I hate to say that, but some dads are going to react like that.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm not even mad at her.
She's 24.
I'm not mad at her.
Like, I'm not mad at her for being pregnant, but she's 24 and her career is starting to go somewhere. And I think for him, he's just kind of, as any dad would be, he's kind of like, okay, you're finally getting into a rhythm. Like, I don't want you to break it. Like, carry on working. Like, you've got years and years and years to be a mother. Like, try and build your career now when you don't have those responsibilities. So I think he's justified in wanting his daughter to kind of live her life a little bit more and have a little bit of experience under her belt.
But we're presuming that's what he's thinking.
It's a lot of presumption. But Sophie, based on one of the previous episodes of Ethnically Speaking, I believe it might have been episode 5, does she really have years and years in order to still be a mother with all our, you know, biological clocks and our biological, you know, business?
She's 24.
She has some time.
Like, come on, guys. She has some time. I'm not mad at her for doing what she did. I think, like, if she is 20, I didn't know how young she was. Do what you want to do.
That was so abrupt.
So, no matter, can we expect a pregnancy announcement for you on social media?
So, okay, here's the thing. If I was gonna do anything like that, here's how it would play out in my life and with my family, okay? Mm-hmm. I would tell them that, like, we're going somewhere, you're going to be filmed, so they have their, like, their contour on, and, you know, their fresh trims, and I'm going to be telling you a surprise, so you know you're going somewhere and you know that your reaction is going to be filmed. I might keep what that surprise is from you, but you're going to know that, like, I'm asking you here to record your reaction to something that you don't know about.
And Luanda, when would you tell us guys? Because I expect us to be like number 2 on the list.
I'd tell you live on the show. Just keep it fresh. Keep it fresh.
So guys, wait for that announcement to come from Luanda and her
son. I'm not getting pregnant for another 10 years minimum. Let me just say that now.
Well, we're still going to wait on that revelation. But until that time, I just want to let you know that we are at the halfway point for our show. We have a lot more conversation to come. But what we wanted to do was take a pause for you to press that like button, press that subscribe button so you don't miss a thing. We'll wait. Do it right now. So we've been talking about big decisions on today's show. The first decision was whether you should buy or rent your home. The second decision is about those memorable moments and should you share them publicly or should you keep them private for your loved ones. And now the big decision that I wanted to talk to you ladies about is something that is affecting millions of people, and that's school exams. So with the coronavirus pandemic, school exam results have been cancelled across the country. So as a result, teachers were asked to estimate the grades of their students and base it on their performance throughout the school year. Now, I don't know if you know, but last week, Scotland released their exam results and there was a lot of shock because the estimates that the teachers had given had been moderated by the Scottish Qualification Association, the SQA exam board, and they had downgraded approximately 125,000 grades. Now, A-level results in the UK have been released this week. GCSE results are being released next week, and England and students are now fearful about what these estimates are going to be because so many of them rely on these grades in order to get into university. The Education Secretary, Gavin Williamson, has already been called out for ignoring people's calls to say that there is going to be unprecedented bias and unintentional bias shown to these students. And they're saying that the people who are going to be penalised in their A-levels and GCSEs are going to be poorer pupils, black and ethnic minority pupils, boys. They're saying that these are the groups that are going to have the lowest calculated grades. I don't know, it's just very upsetting. And they were saying all these things before the exam board had even begun to moderate. We're living in unprecedented time, ladies, but what I wanted to ask you is, do you think the current grading system is fair to all students, or should the government be doing more? Should they be correcting, should they be addressing the impact of these biases and the unequal inequalities that are being shown to marginalised students?
I don't think the grading system is fair to all students, because the school system is not fair to all students. So, give me my clicks.
You can leave it there.
And it, the end.
It ain't done. Drop the mic.
That's my next poem. That's going to be the first line of my next poem, guys. I think it's very well known that black and brown students are underestimated by their teachers. And it's because of the perception that you have of our cultures. You already think that we're going to be disinterested in our work, and you think that we're going to be disruptive. And that's why we're given less of a chance if we act up, because, you know, we're more likely to get excluded than white pupils doing the same thing. Like, you know, a bunch of rowdy white boy students, it's like boys will be boys. And then when it's black males, they're sent to isolation, they're kicked out, and all of those things happen. I know a young black boy who was doing well in his maths class and walked to the next set, to the set above him, and went to that teacher and said, I want to be in this class. I can learn at this pace. I want to be doing this work. And when he told me this story, I was like, I was so proud of him. I was like, this is amazing that you took this initiative to go and fight for yourself. But then when my initial reaction settled, I realized that that should have never had to happen, because we shouldn't ever get to a point where young black students are in the position of rooting for themselves because no one else is doing it. Yeah. So I absolutely want these biases to be addressed, but I don't want people to think that this is solely connected to new issues that we're only seeing because of COVID, because these problems aren't going to go away once our restrictions do.
Lawanda, you said it all. I don't even know what I can even add to that. Because you're right, every single thing you said is correct. And you know what? It's so heartbreaking to think that's what you had to do. But you know what? Congratulations to whoever it is that is raising him, and however he's become the person he's become, that will always back himself. Because I think regardless of education or whatever institutes they put us into, as long as we have the strength to back ourselves, we're going to proceed and go forward in some capacity. But I do feel like this whole estimation thing, even before the undermarking or the lowering down of the grades or whatnot, was stupid anyway, because you have some people, let's not forget, some people are teachers not because they enjoy it, not because they want to help nurture the future, not because of any of those lovely, admirable reasons, but some people are teachers just to earn money, and that's the be all and end all. So when it comes to estimating some of the grades for their kids, for their children, or for their kids, whatever you want to call them, their pupils, they're gonna underestimate to begin with. A teacher might not like a pupil and they will underestimate, like, or the opposite could happen. A teacher could really like a pupil and overestimate. I feel like it's not fair either way, and I feel like something, a whole revamp needs to get done of the whole system. And I'm just honestly, I'm really, really thankful that I was able to do my education and, you know, go from one step to another without something like a global pandemic happening. And thankfully, regardless of, you know, the situation and the kind of systems that we've been put in, my teachers were calm. I mean, like, had a couple of black teachers growing up, had a couple of white teachers growing up. But, you know, so far, apart from uni, I'm not gonna lie, uni was boring. But apart from that, I'm just really thankful. Don't let me start about that uni, boy.
I think my issue here is not even directly with the teachers, because I think with any place, you're going to have good and bad. So you'll have good teachers and you have bad teachers. And, you know, they had to make a decision. They didn't want to do it, you know, because, you know, my sister's a teacher and I've got a lot of friends that are teachers. They didn't want to be put into a situation where they have to give an estimated grade for a student, because you just never know how a kid's going to perform in an exam. And now you have to make the final decision, and that's not usually their role. So I saw the other side of it where it was kind of hard. Like, I know their informed decision wasn't like, oh, I think it's this. They had to take in consideration all the past grades they've got in that subject, all the past grades they've done in homework, coursework, so that they could come up with almost like an average to say, okay, this makes sense for what you're going to get. But it's heartbreaking when you have to be like, okay, but that student was a nice student and maybe they could have studied it, maybe they could have got it, but you know that studying at last minute never works. But realistically, you're only getting a C because you've only had
D's so far, so the highest I could really only give you is a C. Like, do you know what I mean? So I saw the other side of it, which was super tough. But my thing was, I didn't understand where the Scottish, like, examination board came in and then undermined what the teachers gave. That was the bit that I didn't get.
Yeah.
Because the teachers are the ones that know the students, even if there might be a bias or whatever, they know them more than the examination board know them. Mm-hmm. And so they have a reason why they're making this decision, you know, hopefully it's a good reason. But the examination board, it's like, what did you look at to say, no, this person was graded too high, so I'm going to mark it down? That was the point that lost me. And I thought it was also undermining the teachers to basically say, I don't trust you in the way that you grade these children or what you think these children are doing, so I'm going to do it better than you. And I just didn't like the tone that kind of put out there.
To be honest, like, I can actually answer that question, because what it seemed like the SQA exam board was voting on is that they asked teachers to look at past grades and they took that into account. But also what they took into account is what these schools had gotten in these grades for the past 4 years. And then they were trying to do analysis on that, because they were like,
what's that got to do with me? What they were afraid of,
as Anissa, look, Anissa just said, like, this child could be doing a D, so the highest I can give you is a C. What they're saying is, actually, if the most they've been getting is a D, then they should be getting a D. It shouldn't be based on what the teacher thinks the best that they could get.
But people can pull things out of the bag.
But they haven't set the exam. What they have to vote on and what they have to make the decision on is what they're saying is has happened in the past 4 years. So they're saying, based on the estimates that the teachers gave in Scotland, it was like 85% pass rate. And they said last year it was only like 65%. They went, it cannot jump 20% in 1 year. So they went, overmarking is happening. And what they had to do was regulate it to make it like much more in line with what it would have been like with the year-on-year out trends. Now, I don't know if that's correct, but I feel like some teachers probably were given the best case scenario because of the situation and the time. So I'm really on the fence on this, because originally I was just like, no, the exam board is wrong. But
people deserve a pass, Sophie. This year has been so like challenging and unprecedented. We couldn't have picked it. You know, it's okay sometimes to give people a pass. So what if it was 20% and this year was an anomaly? So what that you are setting somebody up
Wait a second.
The reason why I'm saying that is because, like, if I just think about it, a lot of these children that are being disadvantaged, we already know kind of what neighborhoods they're coming from. Their grades, sometimes it's not even about their ability. It's just like, okay, they don't have anywhere to study. They don't have resources. They've got to work. They've got to look after their brothers and sisters. So they don't have the same effort to put into their education. And so sometimes it is about giving a pass. And the reason why I say that is because when I think about my own grades, GCSEs, I was okay. A-levels, it was I don't even know how I got to 2 years. It was just impossible. And so I made it to my university of choice and the subject I wanted to by the skin of my teeth, okay? By the grace of God, by clearing is how grace. I made it. And I needed that pass, because looking at my grades, you would have went, nah, she definitely can't be there. And they let me in. I got that pass. And I said, you know what? Like, okay, I've moved out of London. So everything that was affecting me that was right here is now out of it for me. And now I'm in Coventry. I'm by myself. I'm in this small place. All I do is go library 24 hours. That's all I do. Library 24 hours. I'm studying. I'm doing everything I can to get this education. And it was the proudest moment. Yeah, I walked out and my dissertation was a first. Everything was first.
Yes,
girl. I never got A's in my life. Just because I just wasn't set up to be able to study. That's basically the best. I won't go into it, but I just wasn't set up to study. And so even though I don't want to say clearing was a pass, but that was my pass. And you just gave me that leg up. And I took it and I ran with it and yes, I did girl, what I had well to done. Do. So sometimes you have to. So I know it's like saying, oh, like we can't just give everyone a pass. But sometimes when you do give a pass, the right people will do the right things with it. So I don't see what's wrong with it.
Anissa, you gave me goosebumps, man.
I think I was kind of like heading in like a different direction, because me, I'm talking about like unfairness, and I'm not talking about like people like having grades that doesn't make sense with their track record. I think that people should be graded to what makes sense with their track record. When I was, you know, like doing the whole like college thing and sixth forms, and you look at your predicted grades, for me, I feel like I had a lot of fair teachers who, you know, looked at my work and looked at the way that I was in class and was like, okay, this grade makes sense. But they also did, I don't know if your schools did this as well, probably most schools did this, but they did like a, this is your predicted grade, but this is also the grade that I believe that you can get if you apply yourself more than you're applying yourself now. So it's like, maybe you could get a B in this subject, but Luanda, I know that this paragraph on this paper, that's like to A standard. So if you work at this standard for the rest of the year, you could get these A's in year 11. So there's also like motivation attached to it as well. I don't think students should be like, because what you said, Sophie, like it can jump, it's very, it can jump like up,
not by 20%
down a lot.
Overall for school years, if we're looking at a general number, and I'm talking about the general number that they said, they're talking about all grades, they went, it cannot jump 20% in a year. It doesn't happen. Like, that would be something that was grossly, it might jump by a few percent, but it's not going to
be like catastrophic.
Yeah.
Okay, I get what you're saying. But for me, like when I was in school, there were those years where they had a lot of smart people. And I remember like they would struggle with some other years and they're like, oh my gosh, we're not going to get our like our Ofsted markings because this year they're just getting like C's. And the year like say, for example, the year above me at school, they were like A star, A star, A. And so, you know what I mean? Like you do see a drop and you do want to keep that consistency, but you have to treat students as individuals. Like now that you've given us more information, Sophie, like I do think they were probably being like upgraded a little bit, but, but I think that you do need to treat students as individuals. So for me, I presume that the teachers would make the most sense and give the marks that make the most sense from the track record. And then, but I don't like the idea of students being downgraded because people work so hard.
And it's like, what was the point of asking the teachers in the first place?
They did take it into consideration. They did take it into consideration, but it wasn't the only consideration. And now what we're seeing is all the other things that came into play. So some people are asking, in Scotland's particularly, release the information, release the data, show us what the analysis of all the numbers that you have.
Transparency, we need it.
Exactly, they're asking for it because they're like, we need to understand this, because where people fall through the gaps is that average student in an affluent area would be marked up, whereas an exceptional student in a poorer area would be marked down. And that's where the problem is. It's these kids that are falling through the gap.
Yeah. And that's that part I don't like. That's what I'm talking about that I don't like. Like, I literally just want, just go off the averages. It's not that easy to work out numbers like that. Go off the averages. Stop downgrading students because, like, of their wealth and stuff. Like, make it make sense.
Well, and some people are not good at test environments.
All children are academic. And what we're seeing now is that tests and exams and written exams can't really show the wide berth of how children understand all the intelligence that they have. Some children just aren't academic, some are more creative. But one thing that I definitely wanted to say while we were talking about this is that there is a campaign called #NoWrongPath, which is for students like A-levels and GCSEs. And if you didn't get the results that you wanted, you can go to No Wrong Path campaign and see what other opportunities are available to you, because I'm not sure, but everyone has probably gotten a grade that they weren't happy with, but it doesn't mean that your life is over. It doesn't mean that you can't do your dream job. Keep going. You can do it. Stay on the path.
She's learning
like giving them options. I love it.
Honestly, I believe in it though, because I think, have you guys seen that meme where it's got like a monkey, a fish in a fishbowl, a giraffe, and like a zebra, and it says the exam is see who climbs the tree the best, and you don't take into consideration how many other, like how different everyone's brain works. The school is so like one track minded, like with the way that they grade intelligence. So for me, like it took me a little bit longer to realize that I'm really smart because of the way that you, so I was like, oh, you know what I mean? Because of the way that people grade intelligence, like you have different, like you might be creatively intelligent or emotionally intelligent, but you might even for me, like doing assessments was so much easier than doing exams. And there's just so many factors for people to have these grades to determine their worth. Like, is ridiculous to me. So like if there's any students that are watching that have had like themselves downgraded and they're feeling low, or if you're in year 11 or year 13 and you've been hit with the coronavirus, you can still do absolutely anything that you want with your life.
Yeah, because 100%. good academics will get you a good job. Good emotional intelligence will help you to keep it and get along with your team members. So both of them are completely valid.
Oh, yeah. That was nice. I loved that. Well, talking about kids, we're going to shift gears a little bit. I got a question for you, ladies, and I feel like we've already just got a little bit heated, so I feel like I'm turning the heat up a bit.
I'm already sweating.
Hot girls, I'm so hot. It's so hot.
It's hot, Danny, so probably, you know, you're going to start melting. It's probably what's going to start happening. Okay, so if... I'm so scared to ask what I'm scared
to say. Go on. Tell us. We want to know.
If your partner, right, the love of your life, conceived a child with someone else while you were on a relationship break, is that a deal breaker?
Yes.
You didn't need a second. You didn't just need a second to think about it.
Yeah, I thought. Do you want to
consider all options?
Am I allowed to tell you what I think now?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. What is it? Is it a deal breaker, Linda?
Yeah, it is a deal breaker. Do you know what it is? The issue isn't dating someone who already has kids before you met them. But for me, and now bear with me, ladies, because what I'm about to say may come across a certain somehow. But for me, it's either that when you guys broke up, this person really didn't think you guys were ever going to get back together, so they just continued living their life, or they became irresponsible. And I'm not saying that it's a one-sided thing. I'm not saying that it's always, you know, the woman who tricked him or whatnot. I know stuff happens. But for me, it's like, how do you now continue where you left off when there is a whole human being to consider? There's a whole attachment to another woman that will forever be in your relationship. And this was only, obviously, I don't know how long this break we're talking about. Obviously, if it's like a five-year break, for me, to be honest, a five-year break, a five-month break, I think my answer is pretty much the same. Like a 10-year break, the same thing. Actually, maybe 10 years, I might be a bit more lenient, because that's a whole scope of time.
That's a decade, girl. That's a break.
Yeah. At 10, we are right. At 10, we can do it. But I think, you know, the shorter amount of time we were apart, the bigger no it is for me. I'm sorry.
Okay, I please want to come on this. It's not a deal breaker for me, to be honest. Because a break is a break is a break. Like, if you don't, I'm like Ross and Friends. You know, like when Ross and Rachel broke up and they were like, we were on a break. And he said, I'm like, I'm fully with that. If you don't want them to be with anyone else or date someone else, work through the issue that you have and don't take a break. Like, if you're on a break, you really expect them not to date anybody else or see anybody else.
No, no one said that.
So we're happy with them.
That's not what I'm saying.
Sex,
I'm saying if they come
but once they have the baby, then there's a problem.
Have the sex. Yes. Precisely.
We are on a break. If I am on a break, that means that we, for me, a break is a breakup. I don't care if you say we need a break, we need help. If you don't want that, set the rules of your break. Say, are we allowed to see other people? If we're not, then you can get upset. But if it's a break, it's a break. You've broken. It broke.
I don't believe in this break stuff. Ugh.
Yeah, I don't believe in break. I believe in breakups.
It's a breakup.
So,
go on,
thoughts. No, I have. I think mine relies heavily on circumstance, because I think if I was with someone, because I think sometimes, I know you guys said, oh, I don't believe in this break stuff, but sometimes you meet the person who you think you're going to be with for the rest of your life very young, and you don't really get a chance to explore like being a teenager or being in your early 20s or, you know, like being with other people. Like, I have friends who are with, have been with their partners for years and have, let me just not reveal their business.
Yes.
Let me not do that. But there's a lot of things that you need to explore within yourself. And I feel like sometimes when you stay in the same relationship that you've stayed in from when you were a young age, you don't always lose that teenage mentality. So if you were with someone from the age of 15 to 25, you can kind of like like stifle yourself and still be a mental 15-year-old and not have developed as much as you would have if you were by yourself, when at the same time you could also still be wholly in love with this person and know that you absolutely want to be with them, but you still need that space to be a human being and to be on your own and to be independent. So there are circumstances where I do agree with a break and not a breakup, but for me personally, I think that if I love you and we've come back together and then you have conceived this whole other child, I would consider staying, coming back into our unionship on the basis that I also like this woman. Because if you have a child, I'm going to love that child like it's my own child, but I also need to love the person that you created it with. And if I find it difficult to do that, if I can't even at the bare minimum...
You were living in cow cuckoo land. I'm sorry. I wanted to say it last week, and I'm going to say it this week. You were like last week. You said last week, you were like, when you want to be with someone, you want all of the family and the siblings to get along, and you get on with their siblings and they get on with them. That's not real life. It's not real life. But it's not real life, Sophie, that you're going to get along with everybody. And if you're going to say this person...
You're not going to get along with everyone... You're not going to get along with everyone all the time, but at the bare minimum, you respect these people. What we were talking about last week was blatant disrespect. If I've gotten into a relationship with you and you've like fathered a child with a woman that I can't even respect, then it's not going to work out. We have arguments with our siblings, with our parents all the time. Like, I'm not saying like it's going to be plain sailing every single day of the week, but I'm saying there has to be mutual respect and there has to be love there. If I can't love this woman, then I can't get back together with you.
Luanda,
that you're not understanding?
Look, the thing that I'm not understanding is that you ain't dating that woman. As much as she might cause difficulties
but
or whatever.
Luanda,
you just went through this whole explanation talking about this person could be the love of your life. You might be... If this person is the love of your life and you have spent a couple years apart, they now have a child and there's a difficult woman, you're going to say and you're going to let go of the love of your life because of this external woman that doesn't live in your household.
No, there's a difference between like difficult and me like not having any respect or me like not having any positive feelings towards you. I will happily enter into a blended family. I'm not going to enter into an unhealthy blended family. It's not going to happen.
Look,
me as the single person has this choice whether or not to walk away from this situation. And I will walk away from it if this other person is like a large negative factor in our lives, because they're going to be in your life, in your family for the rest of it.
Look, you
can. And that's why it should be a deal breaker.
Please tap me in. Please tap me in. Tap me in. Thank you. Sorry, guys. I just want to jump in. I agree with the beginning of what Luanda says. It depends on the circumstances. Where I disagree is about the loving the woman thing, just because it depends on the circumstances of which this baby has been made. Because it could be we were on a break and it was a one night stand, she got pregnant, he don't even love her, so why am I gonna love her? That kind of thing for me. Do you know what I mean? But if they were in a little bit of a relationship but then they conceived a child, that's where it gets different for me. Because even if you had come to me now and like you and the woman are no longer together, but you did have a bit of a thing and now she's having your baby, I think as much as I love you, I would press for you to make your family work first. And that's just me in my mind, because I'd be like, I want you to try to make your family work. Like, you are about to have a family. I don't really know if you should be focused on me over here when you've got a whole child over there. But if it was a one night stand and you weren't really with her, then I think it wouldn't be a deal breaker, but I do acknowledge that it would be very, very difficult to now understand, like, especially if it's your first child, it'd be like, oh my God, like, she's having your first baby, not me. Like, that is how I would feel. But then again, it depends on even if I want to have kids. See, I'm just so if I decide that I don't want kids, but now you've got this baby, I would kind of feel a little bit relieved, like, okay, oh, thank God, the pressure's off for me. Somebody else is having a child, at least you have one, and so now, like, we can just be cool the rest of our lives. But that still won't negate that outside of the child, I'm still going to have to deal with this woman the rest of our lives. Yeah. So I'm with Luanda, where we need to have a common ground where we can have a healthy parenting tribe space. Yeah,
but I don't think it's ridiculous to want a healthy relationship.
I think that has to be more from the woman versus me. And the reason why I say it has to be more of the woman versus me, because I got my man, so it's fine. But she might resent me because I got her baby father. So I think the issue would be more on her side. So that's what I feel on the side of the
I don't know. Let me be very clear. I was not saying
come on, that, Sophie.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to let it go. I was not saying that you're ridiculous for wanting a happy home. I'm saying for a lot of people that isn't the case, and people have to make the best of the situation. Now, when you're talking about, oh, well, I want to be able to respect her and this, that, and other, you choose to respect someone by the actions that you take and the words that you use and the language that you make. The respect that you give to someone does not need to be dependent on whether they deserve that respect or not. If someone's disrespecting you, you can still choose to show them the respect that they don't deserve, because you value yourself and you have worth in yourself, and saying, however you act, that's not going to determine how I act, because I respect myself enough to give you what you deserve, even if you're coming at me a bit crazy. So for me, I think it's very different when you meet someone and you're going to be like, actually, I really like them, but you're going to be like, I'll throw you away because there's plenty of good men out there. I don't know if there are.
So I think I don't think you understand, because again, I talked about this last week when I said, like, even when I meet like my partner's mother, and if they're disrespectful, I'm still never going to be disrespectful towards you because I have respect for you. But there are people that I have met in my life that I want absolutely nothing to do with. I don't want anything to do with you. And I'm saying, if that person is the one that you fathered a child with, I have the choice to remove myself from the situation. Like, I don't have to be here. If it's going to cause more negativity than it's worth, then let me remove myself from the situation. And what you were just saying, Anissa, like, I think if you have a partner and then, like, a mother of a child that's not yours, it's everyone's responsibility. It's not going to be more on her or more on me, because I could then, like you said, you could then end up resenting them because you're having a baby for the first time and it's not with me. There's so much going around. So everyone needs to be on the same page of like how we're treating each other, what we will and what we won't do. And I think that it makes for a healthy life for the child, because now you have a whole other person to consider. And like I said, I will be loving that kid as if it's my own kid, but I also need to have a level of respect for the woman that you made it with.
But see, ladies, that's why I think all in all it's a deal breaker. And when I say deal breaker, I've got to come back to my point. Deal breaker, I don't necessarily mean, because I think the word deal breaker means that it's a no and it means it's a definite no. Almost when I say that, because it's almost like an easy life. And don't forget, I'm not saying if you've met someone who already has a child, because I think that dynamic is very different to being with someone who you've been with and then you've broken up. That person has, like for example, is it D-Wade and Gabrielle Union? So, you know, I respect anyone who can do it, like, you know, each to their own. And if you can do it, make it work. And, you know, here's the thing. Not every single baby mother is a troublemaker, but not every single baby mother is not a troublemaker. Like, some are very, what's the word, bitter. So if you can make it work, and if you can, you know, make a happy, healthy family unit for you, the child, your partner, and the woman, then, you know, good for you. Like, I'm happy for you. But for me, I just don't think I even want to put myself into that extra drama, you know. But I do want to ask you ladies a question I just thought of, right? Us women are here debating this.
Yeah.
But do you think men would have a problem if it was the other way around? Do you think so?
Yeah, 100%. Men have some very weird dynamic about, you know, and like, a man has had a baby, you know, it's a baby, you're kind of off limits now, you know. If a woman has children, men seem to usually be more reluctant to get with a woman that has children than a woman does to get with a man that has children. It seems like for men, it feels like a guy has marked his territory by having a baby with a woman. So it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of like someone else's situation going on there. So, and I think that's like a really unhealthy bias. But I think it would be different for a guy. I think a lot of guys I know would just walk away and be like, she ain't the one, so I'll find someone else.
I agree with Sophie. I think a lot of my male friends would have been like, nah, sorry. It's just not what it's going to be. And as Sophie said, it's that whole territory thing. That's like why I think a few of my male friends don't currently date women with children, because they're always like, but the child's not mine. Yep. It's like, of course the child's not mine, yours. It's her child. But that's literally how they think. It's like, what's not mine? They've got this whole mine thing. It's like children. But do you know what, Belinda, what you were saying really made me think back as well. I think it would be an absolute deal breaker for me if
his behaviour during our relationship has been not great, if that makes any sense. Like, say, for example, throughout our relationship, you had been cheetah, pumpkin eater, and now we've gone on break, Kev, and now all of a sudden we're going back together, but you've stopped your cheating ways, but now you have a baby. To me, it would just be a reminder of you and all these other women that you love so much that you cannot let go and you are always with them. It would just be like a final nail in the coffin, and I'd be like, rah, no, I've got to go. So if he was not a cheetah, pumpkin eater, maybe I could stay. But if he was, then I'd have to go because it'd be one more thing for me to let go of.
I had like a male friend who said to me, like, oh, I wouldn't date a woman with a child. And I said, why not? And he said, because I'll never be the priority in that person's life. It's always going to be the child. And I was like, is that a bad thing? It goes back to the thing of like men wanting mothers instead of partners, right? Like, why wouldn't you want to see a mother provide everything for their child? You can still have a healthy relationship that isn't, you know what I mean? Like, if you're not a child, why would you be threatened by a child's existence?
I'd look, for me, it's still the same thing. Like, if you don't want to have these issues, don't go on a break, make it work. Because people, I'm being serious, like studies will show you that people who break, get back together, it's not going to work out. It's not a good remedy. There is something that you can't get past is the reason why you keep breaking. If it's one break and you get back together, that's fine. But for me, if you want to stay together, you're going to have to work through these tough issues. So either make it work, don't make it work. And if you decide to break, deal with the consequences.
So you say what? One break and a done. You can't do 2-3 breaks.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not. Break up. No, I'm not, because there's something that we can't. I've done it before, and it means that we're not meant to be. We cannot seem 100%. To make it work. That's what's going on. It's not an issue. We can't seem to make it work. So we have to just decide that as much as we feel like we're meant to be together, we're not. Let's just wish each other the best and keep it moving. Mm.
There was also Steph and Aisha Curry, because I was talking earlier about young people getting together in long-term relationships and then feeling like I haven't had a chance to explore that much with other people or just be by myself. Steph and Aisha, I think they were either high school sweethearts or together from college. Yeah, that's so young, right? And they actually considered going on a break and, you know, experiencing entanglements. And then they decided to stay together. And as far as I'm aware, they're still together.
They're married with three children.
They're meant to be. They are meant to be, baby. Beautiful. I love when love works out. That's what I like.
We love to see it. We love love. You know?
We love love.
And on that note, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Ethnically Speaking. We hope you have enjoyed it as much as we have enjoyed debating. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and the notification bell. And also, let's keep the conversation going. Would you stay with your partner if they conceived a child with a whole other human whilst you were, to quote Ross, on a break? And if you want any resources from the episode, head over to unitedmelaningroup.com/ES009. We will see you the same time, same place next week. Stay safe and stay alert. Hey, it's Luanda Yasmin, and you've just enjoyed an episode of Ethnically Speaking.